I don't know if Zoom picks up claps anymore. Should I just
Oh.
squawk?
Yeah,
Wah!
I didn't hear anything. I think Zoom's background noise filtering canceled it out. Okay. Hi, welcome back to Journey of the Monkey King. We had a much longer break than intended, but we're back.
And we're bird people now.
We are bird people now.
We're bird people.
Life happened, lots of stuff happened. The surgery was a success. I am now a bird person.
Did we talk about the act? Oh, okay, never mind.
Let's not.
That's not. That's not. No, we. I would. Zoom will no longer pick up the sound of finger snapping or hand clapping. So I was squawking to Mark time on the
Honestly,
recording instead.
I'm kind of fine with this. Zoom's background noise filtering is really good, and it makes editing the podcast a lot easier. So that's why we record with Zoom.
It won't pick up cats meowing anymore. We've discovered this.
Yeah, well,
Yeah,
there's
but
some
if you have a
sacrifices we
parrot,
have to
you're
make.
fucked. It'll pick up a squawk. Yes. Longer than usual hiatus.
Yeah, it's fine probably. If you want some news since we last were here, I talked about the Where's Me Jumper mural that kept getting vandalized the last time. As far as I can tell, that has not been vandalized since, so
Yes.
removing explicit depiction and mention of Karl Marx has worked.
Oh, no, bad. That one's bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I read Empress of Forever in the meantime, which is like it's a novel that, among other things, is kind of a loose space opera retelling of Journey to the West. There's a space pirate queen, Sun Wukong, in it.
Ooh, you gotta lend me that.
I got it from the library, so
Ah,
I
fuck.
do not have the copy anymore to lend it to you, but the library probably does.
You've got to send me the name, and then as soon as I remember to get on to the revenue service for a letter so that I can prove that I have proof of address, then remember that that letter exists, and then go to my local library and remember the name of the book that you told me. And get my library card, I will have that. So it probably is not happening.
It's Empress of Forever by Max Gladstone anyway.
Cool. Okay.
He kind of got you might know, or you might, some people might have heard of How to Lose the Time, or this was it This Is How You Lose the Time War or something like that, that was co-written by him, that blew
Oh.
up a while ago.
I've heard of that.
Yeah, one of the people who co-wrote that also wrote this. It's
Okay.
fun. The main character annoyed me for a bit because she's kind of a CEO tech genius mastermind
I no longer want to read
inventor.
this.
That it within the first couple of chapters, she gets catapulted into the space future and is, I don't know, it's not a massive part of the book, but it's there, and there's occasional annoying references to it. I got it. I was annoyed at it at first, and the book grew on me over time. It's fine enough. They turn the dragon horse into a lesbian.
Oh, well, as long as they do that, that's fine. I mean, that's just, you've paid your taxes at that point. You can just go hog wild. As long as your dragon horse has been turned into a lesbian, you will be forgiven for any and all crimes of taste or propaganda. You can write whatever the fuck you want at that point. You can paint a million, billion, billion Where's My Jumper or Where's Me Jumper, sorry, murals if you remember to turn the dragon horse into a lesbian.
Yeah, I don't know. Also in bookkeeping, I deleted my Twitter account. The podcast Twitter account still exists. I'll probably still use it and do my continued half-assed promotion on it. But yeah, I just deleted my personal account because
why wouldn't you?
It's increasingly falling apart.
Yeah, it was. I wanted to stay to the very bitter end because, you know, at the beginning of the end, it was fun. It was like the last days of Rome. You know, it's now I'm just kind of. It's like the climate apocalypse. It's the end of the world, but it's dragging on far too long, and you still have to go to work. You know.
Yeah.
I did also make.
I think I mentioned this before. We had the hiatus. I did make a Mastodon account for the podcast, Monkey King Pod on mastodon.ie. The Irish one. I haven't bothered signing up for Blue Sky. There's too many websites. I don't.
We've had enough websites.
Yeah.
Fewer websites. It's time to move on. Well, no, actually, that's how we got into this place, and the internet got into this weird gentrification space.
Sorry,
and,
true, you true. Know, more websites, fewer, like, gigantic mono websites that are...
More
like...
weird, easily customizable, poorly made websites kept alive by people with monomania and poor social lives.
Yeah, such as my site, oakreef.ie, where I... publish stuff I've made, I guess.
Is that still going?
Yeah, I mean, it's just like it's not like a blog or anything, it's just like a little gallery of shit I've made, so I only add to it every couple months, pretty much ish.
Good for you.
There's also one last thing before we get into the episode, which is that I want to get slightly defensive and preemptively respond to something that wasn't said to me directly, but I saw people I saw a couple posts on like two different sites along the lines of I'm sick of podcasters like apologizing for not pronouncing words correctly, just look up how to say it.
What was your response, Quiva, spelled C-A-O-I-N-H-E?
So yeah, I did not respond to it on the sites, but I thought I'd just like throw out a little bit of defensiveness onto the podcast here, which is like, so Irish in Ireland is a language that most people don't speak, that you learn a bit of in school, and that you have some exposure to growing up, but not necessarily ever really learn to speak it properly. And like I was trying to re-explore, relearn the language a while ago. And I have difficulty listening to Irish and like even hearing the differences between like slender and broad consonants, which is a concept that exists in Irish. That is, I mean, the types of phonemes might exist in English, but they're not like they don't have meaning. There's like the word. I'm going to try. I might not even say this correctly because I have, like I said, I have difficulty even hearing these differences myself, let alone reproducing them. But so, bod is
boat.
Is boat, and the plural is bod,
boats.
Which can be a very subtle distinction. I don't know how well it came across in the way I said, or even if I got it particularly well.
If you speak Russian, it's very similar to hard and soft signs. Like ugal and ugal, you know.
The linguistic term is velarized versus palatalized consonants. And yeah, I have difficulty distinguishing those when I'm listening to Irish all the time, that's a language I grew up with at least some exposure to. With like fucking Mandarin, not only is there going to be lots of sounds my ears are not used to, it's also a tonal language which I just like have no frame of reference for really dealing with.
Maybe you should try listening to it when you're not fucking. That might make a difference.
When I'm not what?
Sorry, you said fucking Mandarin. I made a terrible joke. Let's move on. Let's move on so quickly.
Okay.
From that.
But yeah, like, I sometimes do just fuck up and I forget to look something up, or I look something up and then we like get delayed in recording and it's like a week later and I've kind of forgotten. But a lot of the time I'm apologizing, not because I haven't looked up these words, because I have and listened to it and tried to say it myself and I just know that my pronunciation and reproduction of those words is inadequate. And I'm not really going to get to the point where I can say them correctly unless I go off and spend a year doing nothing else with my free time but learning Mandarin.
And I don't speak Mandarin or do any of the research for this podcast, so I am just going to sit in silent smug judgment like the rest of you.
Yeah. So yeah, that's all. And also sometimes I assume that I know how to say something because I've heard other people say it a certain way and then I discover it's wrong, like fucking saying Tang Dynasty rather than Tang Dynasty for a very long time because I had heard other people say that and that's how it looks like how you would pronounce it in English, and it's like, yeah, that's it, isn't it? I'm not great at this, but There is.
You're doing amazing, sweetie.
there's reasons beyond idiot doesn't look stuff up.
Yes. I don't know. It's kind of like, have you ever tried to hear English people pronounce doll?
Yeah.
When even it's very simple. One, you can tell them it's pronounced like D-A-W-L. But then, you know, to a Londoner, that sounds a lot different. D-A-W-L sounds a lot different to the way it does in Liverpool.
Mm.
So even when you're trying to spell something out phonetically, you're dealing with lots of regional accent variations, and when you're throwing an entirely different alphabet in there, that can, I imagine, get a little confusing too.
But yeah, actually,
I will never, ever stop judging Americans who utterly mangle the pronunciation of Taoiseach or doll or any other, like, this will come from a place of rage, hypocritical rage, yes, but I'll let it fester. It's a hobby of mine. It's like fermenting cabbage, except it's, you know, cooking your own insides in hatred.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, there is also thinking about accents as well of like, I think if there's sounds that aren't produced in English and then I'm trying to say these words, it's hard to then kind of try and say them without trying to slip into a different accent in order to say them, which is a poor history in regards to English speaking people doing East Asian accents. So it's something I avoid doing.
Listen to our episode on the 1970s BBC Monkey King, which is available on Patreon. I'm plugging that right here because that's ethical and okay. Yeah.
Perfect.
Hey, you're the public face. Yeah. Anyway, this has been a 15-minute long explanation / apology / bits of linguistics trivia.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, we are here to talk about a book, and specifically chapter 72 of Journey to the West.
Whoa!
Yeah,
we're 3/4 of the way to the West.
Almost.
Yeah, we gotta be at least like what? Southwest at this point. Northwest.
I don't think they've quite made it into India yet. That does happen at some point. I don't know. They've been doing it for years at this point, much like we have. If you could cast your mind back to however long it was ago since we last had one of these episodes,
or you can go back and re-listen because you have that luxury and we don't.
I mean, we could.
No. I personally did not.
I didn't either. Why the fuck would I do that? Remembering things, having context? Fuck that. I'm not listening to my own voice.
No, not here. We dialect, man.
So, yeah, if you can cast your mind back, the pilgrims last left the Scarlet Purple Kingdom. And they're on the road again. The autumn passes, the winter passes, and in the spring, they come across one evening a house. And Tripitaka decides that they'll stay here for the night, and he will go beg for food himself this time instead of sending Sun Wukong to do it, because he always sends Sun Wukong because he can like fly and stuff, so it's much easier for him to go look for somewhere to get food. But there's a house right here, so. But there becomes a problem, because that was a weird turn of phrase. There becomes a problem.
There becomes a problem. A problem leaps into existence. A problem is becoming.
Yes, a problem asserts itself into existence as Tripitaka approaches the house.
Problem reaches apotheosis. Yeah, okay.
See, he realizes he's going to have some difficulties here because there's 4 women here and no men, and he doesn't know how to deal with that.
Hey.
This
has happened too often.
He grew up in a monastery. It's not really used to having to deal with women at all.
I know, but like so many problems in this novel have been caused because none of these fuckers know how to talk to women. or are capable of treating them as just human beings that can be talked to.
Yeah. So he kind of just stands there and stares at them for half an hour.
For a full 30, okay. And they just indulge this for all they know, lecherous monk in his, like, I mean, at this point in the novel, they should have sort of learned that, okay, well, things might get a little easier for us if we acknowledge the, yeah, anyway, sorry, continue, apologies.
Yeah, so he eventually just says, okay, no, I need to do this. He walks toward the house, and he sees there's 3 more women around the side. They're playing football. And there's a poem about them playing football, by the way, just so you know, there's always poems. Mm-hmm. So he greets them and they offer him some food, and he thinks to himself, ah, wow, the West is amazing. Even the women here will help out a priest. It must be a really holy place. Even the women are doing it these days.
Oh, sure. Aren't the ladies very good to give it a go and all?
Yes.
Aren't you very brave, love?
Yeah. But yeah, they bring Tripitaka inside, but he kind of starts to realize that there's something up. Because there's no furniture in here, actually. There's just, like, big stones to use as tables and benches. It's dark. It seems kind of cave like, actually. Kind of like the place a monster might live, actually, a little bit.
A little bit like a little monstery in here, a little monstrous in the decor. So he hasn't clocked that women are people yet. Has his experience on the road taught him to stop and go, perhaps a little monsterish?
Well, he doesn't want to be rude. So he just kind of sits down and is just like, okay, well, let's see where this is going.
All right.
So they ask him where he's from, and he tells them about the pilgrimage, and they're cool. Let me bring you some vegetarian food. They're cool. There's the... Jesus Christ. They ask him where he's from, and he tells them about the pilgrimage. And you're like, oh, cool. Let's bring you out some nice vegetarian food.
Consider it.
Three of the girls stay to entertain him. And the other four head to the kitchen. And they prepare a nice vegetarian meal by getting some... human fat, greasing up a pan, and throwing on some strips of human flesh, and just burn the living shit out of it. To the point where it's kind of unrecognizable, and they can just sort of pretend it's some very, very fried seitan.
Did you know, like, eating people can technically be vegan?
If they consent?
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess.
I'm not trying to say that this was, like, a consensual victim, but...
Yeah, they also fry up some brains, and again, they just kind of burn the shit out of it until they can kind of be like, oh yeah, it's, like, some tofu. Don't worry about it. This deception... you may be shocked to learn, doesn't really work.
I've tasted human flesh before. You can't fool me.
Well, yeah, they just bring it in front of him. He just smells it, and he's just like, I can't eat this. I'm a vegetarian. I'm like, what are you talking about? These are vegetables. It's fine, don't worry. He's like, no. No, I don't think I can eat this. And they're just like, come on, you're so... why are you being so picky? You're a monk. Like, beggars can't be choosers. Literally. Come on. So Tripitaka, in my scripts here, I wrote Trimitaka for some reason. Tripitaka.
He's keeping trim, because he's not eating human meat. That's
yeah.
Secret.
Actually, the women in this chapter call him fat several times, actually.
There's no need to body shame the monk.
Also at odds with, like, basically every depiction of Tripitaka I've seen in anything.
Yeah. He walks a lot. That's not to say that you can't maintain a really high exercise level and very very lean diet and not be fat, but yeah, it just seems mean.
But yeah, Tripitaka, well they want to eat him, so they're, like, happy about it.
Okay, yeah. Well, maybe he's the finest hunk of meat they've seen for a while.
But yeah, so he just tries to leg it at this point. But they just pin him down and tie him up. They tie him to the cross beams of the room, and for some reason, it's the way he's tied up is just described in detail. One of his arms
We know why. We know why. We don't. You don't need to. For some reason, that we at this point, like, he's been tied up so many times in such loving detail, often by young women, that it is the author's fairly disguised fetish at this point.
Like, if you want to psychoanalyze Wu Cheng again, go ahead.
I mean, like, no shame. You know, we don't kink shame here, but for yeah. some reason. He's like, we know why.
Well, you could tell me how sexy you think this is. So one of his arms is stretched out, pointing forward. So there's one rope tied around one of his arms that's pointed forward. Then the other arm is tied up out, like, alongside his body with another rope, you know, like, going around his torso and his arm together. And then the third rope is tying his legs together. So he's kind of doing it. He's kind of, like, stuck in a Superman pose. From the hung on the crossbeams of this cave. The cave has crossbeams. I don't know.
What, they're gonna chop off his arms first? Also, I don't know if there's, like, in Chinese culture, if it's any way at all similar to, you know, the humiliation inherently, well, not inherently, the humiliation associations that Japanese bondage has. But yeah. I don't know, we've gotten way off track, and I'm trying
you may need to educate me in the audience about Japanese bondage here. This is not
the podcast for my half remembered Shibari 101 class.
I have two PDFs open at the moment. One is this novel, and the other is a 250-word doctoral thesis on a particular kink that I will not specify.
But you'll tell me after. No, it's apparently part of Shibari. It was a sort of ritual humiliation of captured prisoners of high rank if they were tied in this particular way, I think.
Right.
I'm not gonna risk it, like, a cursory Google here. I now feel bad about making fun of you for your defensiveness on pronunciation, because I don't know, but yeah, I don't know. If there's something similar in Chinese culture, if such a thing exists. If such a thing as the Japanese in... Oh, good God. If I am correct,
sorry,
Quiva, a problem becomes Quiva. You are becoming a problem for me, Quiva. If I am correct in my half-remembered from several years ago knowledge about Shibari, if something similar exists in Chinese culture, perhaps that is a reason for the loving depiction, or loving. Now, MJ brings their own bias to the show. The detailed descriptions of Tripitaka getting tied up over and over again. Maybe it's like horror. I don't know. Anyway, the fucker's tied up. The fucker's tied up in a Superman pose. Let's move on.
Okay. I'm sorry.
If you know how to crochet, you know how to do it. Anyway, let's move on.
So anyway, I don't think there's anything sexual about this. So anyway, immediately after tying him up, the girls take off their tops and shoot webs out of their belly buttons and just kind of cover the whole building a cocoon of webs.
Ooh, spider ladies.
Yeah, they're spider ladies. So
he's tied up in a web of lies. Also, why did... Yeah, actually, now let's go back to the tying up bit. Because why didn't they just put him in a web cocoon if they could do that?
I don't know.
Okay, much to think about. Sorry, the house is in a cocoon of webs now.
Yeah, so the side bulls have just been kind of hanging out by the side of the road while all this is happening. Wukong is swinging around some trees looking for fruit. When he looks over and sees a flash of light over where the house is, and he's like, oh, fuck, something's happening. So he heads over and he sees the whole place is covered in these strange white, soft, sticky cords. And he's about to start smashing it with the rod when he thinks, oh, wait. This might just get tangled in this. I should be more careful this time, actually.
Liar. I said fire.
Oh, fire. Burn it. Well, Tripitaka is in there.
Yeah, but it's Wukong.
So he summons the local spirit, as he often does, to get some info. This time we get a bit of a view of what happens when Wukong does his little summoning spell, and a little bit of this spirit's domestic life. Because he's married, he's a wife, apparently.
Oh.
So when Wukong does the spell, it seems to start making him move. But he can control himself a little bit, and he doesn't want to go, so he just starts like walking in a circle around in his shrine. And his wife asks, "Hey, what's wrong? Is your epilepsy acting up? You all right?"
Does it actually say that?
Yes, it does say, "Is your epilepsy acting up?"
Incredible.
And he's like, no. The great sage equal to heaven has summoned me, and I don't want to go because he's going to fucking kill me. Reasonable fear.
On-call jobs pay very well for a reason. Or they should.
So, yeah, his wife...
Some of them do.
His wife's like, he's not going to kill you. You're an old man. He's not going to attack someone your age. And he's like, no, he loves beating up old people. He's going to kill me. I'm fucked. And they keep talking for a little while until he eventually just kind of gives up arguing with his wife and leaves. The old ball and chain. Am I right, fellas? Am I right? MJ, am I right? Am I right?
My partner got me flowers yesterday just because.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, so he goes and bows to Wukong anyway. He's shaking a bit, and Wukong is just like, get up. You don't need to look so worried. I'm not going to kill you. Just tell me about this place. And so this is the Cobweb Ridge, which contains the Cobweb Cave. And there's seven monsters inside the cave. They're all women, and you'll never guess what animal they are.
Are they spiders? Squeal?
They're spiders.
Whoa!
And a couple of years ago, they kicked out the gods who used to live here, so that they could take over the local hot spring, which is called the Purgation Spring. I didn't bother looking up how to pronounce that word because it's in English, and I thought I'd just wing it.
See, it's she's just bad at this all the time. I once heard her pronounce misled as misled. Is that helpful, Quiva?
Yes.
Did I help?
Yes, you did. Well done. At least you didn't mention Frasier's.
The numinous watch now.
So the spider women bathe in the hot springs three times a day. They love it. They love the hot springs. Whatever. So Wukong has some intel now. So he turns into a fly and kind of sits on a blade of grass and waits a little bit for an opportunity. And after a bit, the webs all suddenly disappear and the women head out to go to the hot springs. And they talking about out loud about their plans, and they say they're going to steam Tripitaka later for dinner when they get back.
Very healthy.
Well, Wukong thinks that it's a terrible waste of firewood because it takes so much longer to steam something. They should just boil them instead.
Yeah, but you lose so much flavor that way.
Yeah, he's an Irish dad, really.
Yeah.
Just boil the shit out of everything. But yeah, anyway, jokes aside, that joke is in the book itself, to be clear. He follows them to the hot springs and they undress and dive in. So Wukong thinks to himself, it would be very easy to kill them all now, but he doesn't really want to kill a bunch of women.
For fuck's sake, lads! How many times?
So
how many times are we gonna do this?
So do you wanna guess what he does instead of attacking this group of women who are having a bath?
Does he do something very sensible? Track their places back to the cobweb house while Trick Attack is unattended, go in through the webs, cutting them carefully, and extract him?
No, he steals their clothes.
Fucking Revenge of the Nerds shit. Come on.
Yeah, he steals their clothes.
I don't feel good about this, Quiva.
I'm sorry.
I don't. Be better.
It's going to get worse. If it makes you feel any better, it's going to get worse.
Of course it is.
So Wukong heads back to Baji and Wu Jing and tells them what's after happening. And Baji complains he should go kill the monsters instead of just, like, leaving them in the hot spring. And Wukong is like, I don't want to, but you can go do it if you like.
Oh, you're right. It is going to get so much worse.
So, you may not be surprised that when Zhu Baji goes to the hot springs with seven naked women in it, he decides to be a creep.
Yep.
So, yep. Long story short, he strips down and dives in with them, and they try to throw him out, but he turns into a fish and swims around for a while between their legs and stuff. And eventually he dies out again and puts back on his clothes and gives a little speech about who he is and how he's gonna kill them all for trying to eat his master.
You're being a creep and you've blown our cover.
Yes.
Also, could he always shapeshift?
Yes.
Why is he still a pig?
Because that's just his normal appearance. Okay. That's just his default. He goes back to being a pig.
Hand wave.
Yeah. They beg for mercy and they offer to just let them go and give the pilgrims some money, which is probably a tactic that other monsters probably would have been a good idea for them to try rather than repeatedly trying to kill Wukong. But he just says, no, I'm gonna kill you anyway. He just wants to murder these women.
I mean, giving money won't get Tributaka back, I guess.
They are trying to eat someone, but so now that their lives are being threatened, they you know, they'll bear some immodesty. So they jump out of the water and shoot webs out of their bellies again and completely cocoon Baji in it. Because they weren't just going to stay in the hot spring while he killed them.
There. Yeah.
So yeah, once he's tied up, they just leave him there. and they head back to the cave and they call their sons for backup. So, yeah, each of them has adopted a child. Their names are Bee, Hornet, Cockroach, Cantharus, which is apparently a genus of soldier beetle, according to Wikipedia, Grasshopper, Maggot, and Dragonfly. So they're all insects that the spiders were going to eat, but begged for mercy, and so they then adopted them as sons. It's a bit of an odd relationship.
Yeah, that doesn't seem healthy.
So they tell the sons to defend the house while they flee to their brother's place. Like the son's uncle's place.
Did they take Tripitaka?
No, they leave him behind.
I mean, well then.
They also withdraw their webs, so maybe they can only like have so much out at once, and that's why they tied up Tripitaka. Why it's not using? I don't know. They withdraw all their webs, and Baji is freed. I don't know how magic webs work.
I guess that takes care of the we won't hurt and or speak to or consider the personhood of a woman problem.
Don't get too hasty.
Great.
Baji is free and he heads back to the disciples. And they see that his face is a bit bruised from like falling over and smashing his face on the ground when he got tied up. And they ask what's going on. So he explains to Akon what happened. And they all realize, oh wait, the spiders are all free again, and no one bothered to go rescue Tripitaka while Baji was doing that. Whoops.
Whoops indeed.
So they rush to the house, but they're blocked by the seven insect children, who are in fact also, even in human form, quite small. The tallest of them, it says, is no more than 2.5 feet tall. So Baji charges at them, and they all immediately realize that they can't fucking take him on a head-to-head fight. So they all change back into their original forms, which is interesting. Not seven individual insects, but seven massive swarms of insects. And they start
interesting
biting the shit out of the pig.
It's hard to feel sorry for him. You can't.
Mm.
You can't root for Baji.
It doesn't last too long. Wukong pulls off some of his hairs and he transforms them into hawks. And the hawks, the swarm of hawks, kill all of the insects.
It sort of feels like the women could have done a lot more damage than their swarm of bug sons.
Yeah, well, they fucked off. So the pilgrims untie Tripitaka, look for the spider woman. Can't find them. And failing that, they just stack up a bunch of firewood and burn the place down and head on the road again.
With Tripitaka, right?
With Tripitaka.
Okay. Great.
But we have not seen the last of the spiders.
No?
No. But we have seen the last of this chapter because that's the end of the chapter.
Okay. Scary spider ladies.
Yeah, there's this chapter is also the basis for a silent movie that was made in 1927 called The Cave of the Silken Web. It was believed to be lost for a very long time, but there was a copy found in Norway in the 2010s. You can find it up on YouTube. So the copy that was found has both Chinese and Norwegian intertitles, but you can find English subtitles for it as well. That's available as an like an you know, piece of early Chinese cinema if you want to look it up.
It sounds very cool. We should look at it.
Yeah, interesting that that's the one that they decided to commit to screen. Humans, we pervs.
Yeah, a bit.
Yeah, a bit. A little bit. Podcast!
Podcast. Woo!
Yay!
We're back, baby!
We're back! Yeah. You can follow us in some social media places.
Yeah.
Probably down below in the show notes where the sins can be corrected. Create more sins there, just for fun. It creates a sort of infinite feedback sin loop.
Uh-huh. Sure.
Our social media handles are our sins.
Yeah, I deleted my Twitter account, so that's not there anymore. The show still has one. There's a Mastodon account. MJ still has a Twitter account and Instagram. Yes. Oh yeah, also I said I wasn't going to do this, but I've started recording a second podcast.
Oh yeah.
With my friend Jen, who did the bonus episode on Dragon Ball with me, I've started recording a podcast about the Ring series. Because occasionally I just get obsessed with something and my release valve for that is now making podcasts. The plan is I'm going to start releasing episodes for it at the end of this month on Halloween, because it's a horror franchise, for patrons of this podcast, because I don't want to set up a second Patreon account. You won't get charged for these. For the second podcast, don't worry about that. But I'm going to release episodes of the Ring podcast, which I'm literally calling the Ring podcast because I like stupid names.
If you'd done it in as a video podcast, you could have called it the Ring Light.
But I like mine better because it's stupider.
Yeah. Mine was also pretty stupid, but yours is stupider.
So yeah, we'll be releasing first episode for patrons on Halloween, then a general release on a month's time at the end of November, and then yeah, going forward, episodes will be released for patrons of this podcast a month early. It's a confusing system, but like I said, I didn't want to make a second Patreon account.
And that makes everything fine.
Yes. I'm so good at this. Oh yeah, speaking of me being good at doing podcasts, Spotify keeps like emailing me about like extra things they've added to like their podcasting thing. They added like some sort of Q&A system, so there's like I don't use Spotify, I don't really know how this works, but they added some sort of Q&A thing so that if you open up a podcast episode on Spotify, it'll like ask what did you think of this episode, and you can like post answers. I didn't do that. I'm not asking those questions. Spotify just sort of did this itself. We've so far gotten two responses to the default "What did you think about this episode?" question from the same person. The first answer was, love the silly murder monkey. And the second was, man, this silly murder monkey is a really silly murder monkey. Thank you, Ituflo, for your responses. Great. If you see little things like that pop up on the podcast and Spotify, I'm not doing that. I just put out the episodes, and the podcast service I use puts them on Spotify for me. I never log into Spotify. I don't use it. I'm good at this.
Yes. Well done. I'm proud of you. You did so good.
If you want to ask me a question or about the podcast, the Twitter account is Monkey King Pod.
Yep.
Bye.
Bye.